Beloved Book One. Kaiozan once returned to Isan to interview him. Isan said to him, "You are now called a good and clever teacher. How can you distinguish between those who come from all parts and know it and those who don't know it, the masters who have inherited it and those who have not, the profound learning and the meaning learning? Explain and let me hear." Kaiozan replied, "Kaiozan has had this experience. When monks come from all directions, he raises his stick and asks them if this is expounded where they come from or not. Further, he says to them, leaving this aside, 'What are the old teachers where you come from teaching?'" Isan admired him and said, "This has always been the claw and fang of our sect."
Manisa, the silence here is so dense. One feels a little afraid even to utter a word. It may disturb the silent lake of your consciousness. But always remember that in the wake of words, silence is deepened. The higher the mountain, the greater will be the valley surrounding it. A great mountain cannot have a small valley. There is a tremendous balance in everything as far as nature is concerned. The essential Zen is an effort to bring you to the language of existence that you have forgotten completely. You have forgotten completely the most important, and you are filled in your mind with all kinds of gibberish. You may know, you may not know. Gibberish is not an English word. It comes from Persia, modern day Iran, and it comes from a very mystical person, Jabbar, because he never spoke anything relevant. Not only that, it was irrelevant, there was no grammar, there was no word at all, but only sounds. Because of Jabbar, the name gibberish came into existence. But Jabbar was saying through his gibberish something. He was saying all that we can say about existence is gibberish. He was very much in tune with existence. And it seems unbelievable that he has 1,000 disciples. Sitting by his side, when he is silent, they will be silent. When he will go into gibberish, they will go into gibberish. And near about 25 people became enlightened. Not a word was said by Jabbar, nothing was heard by anybody. You cannot write a treatise on Jabbar because he never spoke anything except the word gibberish. But he was a radiant man, a man who has come to flowering, whose spring has come, and who has not been afraid to be vulnerable and open and receptive. He went along with the wind. Zen has done the same from a different angle, but you must be aware of the fact that any authentic master, to whatever age, to whatever country he belongs, is not interested to preach you a doctrine. His interest is to bring you in communion, in balance with the reality that surrounds you. Zen has used many methods never known before . You cannot conceive in a Greek context the validity of any method of Zen. Even Socrates and Plato would have been at a loss if they had met Bodhidharma. Arjabbar, I always think what a hilarious meeting it will be, Jabbar meeting Socrates. Socrates is so logical, so rational. His honesty is exactly the same as Jabbar. He is ready to risk his life for his truth. But still he has not risen until the last moment of his life to enlightenment. The day he dropped all knowledge, all wisdom, the day he dropped language as such, that very moment a tremendous silence descended upon him. Those of you who are slowly, slowly moving towards the great experience will become aware, not because I say so, but because you experience it so. How can you say anything about the tremendous silence that is here now. Our minds are preventing us. Our minds are taking us away from the very center of our being. The mind is not interested at all in an interior exploration. It is absolutely committed to the outside and the objective. Before I talk about Ishan Sutra, because this sutra will be the last of this series, and also this sutra is the last of Ishan's life. This sutra ends exactly at the time Ishan dies. The death of a person indicates how he has lived, whether he has lived at all or not. You may be believing that you are living, but don't be so certain. Every madman in all the madhouses in the world believes absolutely that he is mad. He is not mad. He wonders why people consider him to be mad. Slowly he comes to the conclusion that the world is mad. Poor fellows, they cannot understand my status. A man who has been crazy all his life, went beyond the boundary. Small trips beyond the mind can be tolerated, but he went a little too far. He started saying that I am dead. Everybody laughed. Everybody said, this is too much. You have been doing already great things. And how can you be dead? You are speaking. He said, so what? Dead people speak. You are walking, you are eating, you are sleeping. He said, that does not prove that I am alive. That simply proves that I am vegetating. But as far as my insanity is concerned, my deadness is concerned, I am absolutely certain. They took the man finally to a psychoanalyst. The psychoanalyst said to the family, don't be worried, it will take a little time. You all leave him with me and he has to come for 1 hour session twice a week. All this time, the madman who has now become dead was smiling. The first question the psychoanalyst asked, why are you smiling? He said, it's strange. A single man is alive amongst a group who are all dead, but just to convince that they are alive, they are trying to convince me that you are also alive. And I have never seen anything living in me. The psychoanalyst was at a loss himself because this was an absolutely new case. He has never dealt with dead people. But he found out a way. He took a knife and cut the madman's finger. Blood started coming out. The psychoanalyst said, have you ever heard that dead men don't bleed? He said, yes, while I used to be alive, I have heard this saying. The psychoanalyst felt great pride, but the madman said, don't be proud. It does not prove that I am not dead. It only proves that the proverb is wrong. Dead men do bleed. I am an example, living example. After 2-3 sessions, the psychoanalyst was continuously thinking about the man, and slowly a doubt started arising in him that if somebody asks me to prove, how I am going to prove that I am alive? That night he could not sleep. Next day was his session. He said to the man, I will not charge you anything. But please leave me alone. You can find some other psychoanalyst. There are a rupee a dozen. Because I am becoming suspicious about my own life. Rather than convincing you that you are dead, you are by and by convincing me that who knows, I may have died. Perhaps I am dreaming that I am alive. What proof that you are not dreaming? Death is the criterion in the tradition of Zen. How a man dies proves whether he has lived or not. Only a living man can die. You cannot afford to die if you have not lived. I have heard about a great scholar. He became aware that he was alive only when he was dead. Then suddenly he realized, my God, I used to be alive. And I never took any note of it. Particularly in Zen, the masters saw their highest peak of consciousness . Death is the criterion. If you can die gracefully, blissfully, almost dancingly, that proves that you have lived. And you have lived so deeply that you know that death is only the changing of the house. Kayozhan once returned to Isan to interview him. You will be surprised. That is another speciality in Zen, that disciples come to interview the master. Nowhere else, but Zen is very playful. Its playfulness is so deep that it takes nothing seriously. Kayozhan once returned to Isan to interview him. Isan said to him, "You are now called a good and clever teacher. How can you distinguish between those who come from all parts and know it, and those who don't know it, the masters who have inherited it, and those who have not?" The profound learning and the meaning of learning. explain and let me hear. Kayozan replied, Kayozan has had this experience. When monks come from all directions, he raises his stick and asks them if this is expounded where they come from or not. Further, he says to them, leaving this aside, what are the old masters where you come from teaching? Isan admired him and said, this has always been the claw and fang of our sect. Few things to be noted. Kayozan succeeded Isan but before he became enlightened, it shows his daringness, his courage to interview the master. And it also shows the grace and greatness of Isan that he did not object to it. That you don't know anything about it. And you are trying to interview me. But without saying it, if you look at the whole thing, it becomes just the opposite. It is an interview not of Isan by Kayozan, but an interview by Isan of Kayozan. He did not say anything to hurt him. He did not reject the interview that you are not of the quality yet. You have not experienced your innermost core. Rather than rejecting, he accepts it and starts the interview himself. Kayozan replied, Kayozan has had this experience because Isan has asked, how do you teach people? And how do you know whether somebody knows or not? Whether somebody is a master or only a pretender? And Kayozan has forgotten completely that he has come to interview and he is being interviewed. The craftsmanship of a great master. Kayozan replied, Kayozan has had this experience when monks come from all directions he raises his stick and asks them if this is expounded. He is not asking about the stick. He is raising the stick to point thisness. Are you coming from a master who has explained you thisness? The present moment of splendor, the great moment of being nobody, because a master never hits a disciple unless a disciple is really capable. To be awakened by a single hit Kyozan said, when monks come from all directions, he raises his stick and asks them if this is expounded, where they come from or not. Further, he says to them, leaving this aside, what are the old masters, where you come from teaching? In fact, if you have found a master, you have found your home. There is nowhere to go. Or wherever you go, you will find your master and nobody else. When Gautam Buddha became enlightened, his first words were strange. Not only I am enlightened, the whole existence is enlightened with me. This music of silence, soundless, these flowers, invisible, falling all over the place, I was just keeping my eyes closed. Today my eyes are open, but that does not make me superior. From the smallest grass weed to the greatest star, everything is in blissfulness. Man has created only one thing, misery for himself and misery for others. We are great creators of misery. If someday nothing happens terrible to you, that day is wasted. Something terrible, so that you can talk about it, rejoice about it, some great tragedy. People don't like to see comedies. People like to see tragedies. When there is a war going on, everybody gets up early in the morning to find the newspaper. What is happening? Everybody looks fresh. Something terrible is happening. So many thousands of people are dying. We have become so accustomed to tragedy. And comedy seems to be tasteless. When you have found a master, you have found him. You can remain, you can go, but the master has settled in your heart. Those who go on and on simply indicating that they have not found the man who makes your heart dance. They have not clicked with somebody. They have not found a man of presence that engulfs you with love and joy and compassion and light and life and love and beauty and truth and all that is divine in existence. Unless you have seen those two eyes in which all that is divine reflects, you have to go in the hope somewhere you may find. But remember always, because you can miss a real master, you have to be absolutely receptive, utterly open, with no doors closed, with no windows closed. The fresh breeze comes with great fragrance. The coolness of it, the perfume of it is always available, just your doors were closed. So if you don't find a master, don't think that there is no master. First, begin to see, are you capable to receive a master? Is your heart open? is not your mind burdened with many kind of prejudices? What are all your religions except prejudices? No man of intelligence can depend on birth. Birth is accidental. You are born a Hindu, that does not make you a Hindu. You are born a Mohammedan, that does not make you a Mohammedan. Such a great phenomenon as religion cannot be left on the accidental phenomenon of birth. You have to choose it. You have to find it. Everybody has to go into deeper search. Isan admired him. Remember, admiration is not the real appreciation of a master. If Isan has given a good slap to him, or a good stick, that would have been appreciation. Our stakeholder, because I am a lazy man, I cannot carry the stick. Has come from Germany. Just show your stick and hit poor Manisha. Isan admired him and said, "This has always been the claw and fang of our sect." Seeing that he will not understand, he is not yet ripe, he avoided the stick. Isan taught for over 40 years, during which time he gathered innumerable disciples. On February 20th, 853, he went through a ritual ablution, seated himself in the meditation posture, and smiling, died at the age of 83. His stupa was erected on Mount Kui, home of his monastery. The emperor gave him the posthumous title Ta Yuan, the great perfection. Isan must have worked hard in polishing an ordinary stone into a diamond. Kyozan does not so much incite intelligence, meditativeness, but it is the compassion of the master to do his best. 40 years he worked on Kyozan. It is a long time. But for compassion, neither time means anything, nor space means anything. Isan succeeded bringing him home. I am reminded of a great emperor who dreamt one night a great black shadow is standing before him with trembling hands and throbbing heart. He asks, "Who are you?" He said, "That we will discuss later on. I have come to inform you that tomorrow evening, as the sun will be setting, you will die." And the shadow disappeared, and with the shadow the sleep also disappeared. He was perspiring. He called the attendant. In the middle of the night, all the astrologers, palmists, prophets were called to interpret the dream. What does it mean? They started looking in their great scriptures. Is there any precedence? There was no precedence at all, because death never informs anybody. It just comes without even knocking your door. The sun was rising, and the old attendant of the emperor, who was almost like his father, because his mother died early and his father was so much engaged in wars that he had given the small child to this old servant to take care of him. and he has taken care perfectly. So although he was a servant, but the emperor almost respected him like the father. He was a substitute father. The old servant came close to him and he said, "I am not a scholar and I am not an astrologist and I am not an alchemist. I don't know anything about these great things. One thing I know, that you should not stay in this palace. Take our best horse and move as fast and farther from the capital. If possible, enter into another kingdom. And as far as these scholars are concerned, they have never come to any conclusion. Never. They discuss and discuss, and every argument leads to another argument. But in the end, the hands are empty. So let them discuss. You should not wait, because once the sun has started rising, the setting will not be too far away. In the rising sun itself, the setting of the sun is intrinsic. It appealed. So he left without saying anything to the great scholars to confute each other and fight and argue. Took his best Arabian horse, told the horse that we have to reach as far away as possible. It is a very critical moment. Horses and their lovers have a certain way of communicating, just as dogs have a certain way of communicating. The horse started with full speed. They never stayed for a single moment even to drink water or to eat something. They were happy that before the sunset they had crossed their kingdom. They reached into another kingdom. Outside the kingdom there was a great mango grove. The sun was already setting and the king thanked the horse. He said, "I had no idea that you can go so fast. I knew that you are one of the greatest horses, but this is speed. And just at that moment, he felt a hand on his shoulder. He looked behind, the same black shadow. And the black shadow said to the horse, "I was also worried whether you will be able to make this much distance or not. Because the emperor is destined to die in this mango grove. I never inform people. There is no need. The need arose because the distance was so much and there was no reason for him to go and to come to this mango grove. Just as the emperor is grateful to you, I am also grateful." A beautiful story, but some deeper approach is needed. Mind always takes you far away. The servant was perfectly intelligent, rational, far more intelligent than those so-called scholars. But mind is mind. If an enlightened master would have been there, he would have said, "It is enough time. You just go in. No horse is needed. You don't have to move a single inch outside. Just go in. And there is no death. Death exists only for those who live their life in the outside world. To those who have known their innermost core, death is just a shadow. It has no solidity, no substance, no reality. But Isan continued to teach Kyozan for over 40 years. Enlightenment can happen in this very moment. It depends on your urgency, totality, time is not a question, neither causality. Nothing is needed for it to happen because it is already there. Only you have to turn your vision to look inside. 42 years, a great compassionate master Isan worked on him, and finally managed almost a dead man to become a Buddha. His stupa. Stupa is the Buddhist word for a memorial. It still exists on Mount Kui. Where after his enlightenment, he established his monastery. And certainly he must have become enlightened because his death shows it. On February 20th, 853, he went through a ritual ablution, seated himself in the meditation posture, and smiling, died at the age of 83. His stupa was erected on Mount Kui, home of his monastery. The emperor gave him the posthumous title Ya Ta Yuan, Great Perfection. The whole glory and credit goes to Isan. He turned an ordinary man into a great perfection. Soseki wrote, once in a thousand years, the Udambara blossoms. Udambara is a metaphorical tree. Once in a thousand years, the Udambara blossoms. It has opened its auspicious flowers. Many labored to bring it from India to China. Its heady fragrance lingers without fading and is not lost among the thousand grasses, the countless weeds. The same fragrance reached to its crescendo in Japan. Anybody who realizes the fact of his being a Buddha becomes a flower that blossoms in thousands of years. And even if the Buddha dies in the body, the fragrance remains and those who have the right sensitivity, they can smell even this moment Gautam Buddha or Bodhidharma It is not a question of time. The Buddhahood is such an experience. In the body, the Buddha will die, but in the spirit, he will float around you for eternities to come. He has melted in the universal, and you can find him even this very moment. And we are searching for him every moment. The Buddha is our nature. Manisha has asked, beloved Bhagavan, is witnessing a learning or a remembering? Manisha, it is both. And it is both not. Both in the sense that in the beginning you have to learn to enter into your inner temple and then you have to remember continuously, because to forget again and again is human. But as your remembrance becomes a silent breathing in you, the moment you start breathing Buddha in and out, then it is neither learning nor remembering. It is simply you. You have not achieved anything. You have not discovered anything. It has always been there. And whether you remember it or not, it will always remain there. That's why Zen does not take things seriously. What does it matter in this life or in some other life? You are to become a Buddha. The Buddha is the new man. He is the man of the future. The whole human consciousness is moving towards Buddhahood. Strangely, it is already there within you, but you are not aware. Hence, a master can be helpful to you. It is just like tickling you. And you start laughing. And I have not tickled yet. And you will start feeling. The master's work is to tickle you. And it is a joy to tickle 10,000 Buddhas. Now it is time for Sardar Gurudayal Singh. He waits and waits for his time. If I go on continuing telling jokes to you, one thing is certain, I may die, but Gurudayal Singh is not going to die. He will still wait. At the end of the Sunday school, the teacher, Miss Holy Nose, turns to the kids and says, "Now, how many of you children would like to go to heaven?" Everybody shoots up their hand, except for one little girl. "Come on, Sally," says Miss Holy Nose, "don't you want to go to heaven?" "Sure, I want to go to heaven," replies Sally, looking around, "but not with these guys." The body of Mendel Krawitz is lying in an open coffin in Finkelstein's funeral parlor. As the mourners file past to pay their respects, Jaime Goldberg clucks his tongue and shakes his head. He was an atheist. He never believed in heaven and hell. "You know," Jaime says to Grandpa Finkelstein, who is standing by the coffin looking somber, "really?" replies the Fink, looking at the dead Mendel's immaculate suit and tie, "then I guess he's all dressed up with nowhere to go." Gorgeous Gloria is fed up with her usual boyfriends, so she decides to join a computer matchmaking service. She sends in all her personal information and preferences and then waits excitedly for the result. The very next day, she gets a phone call from her first prospective date. After 10 minutes of chatty conversation, the guy suddenly says, "I'm 9 inches long and 4 inches around. Are you interested?" "Interested?" cries Gloria. "I'm fascinated. And how big is your prick?" Vedana. Close your eyes. Feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your totality of consciousness, with an urgency as if this is going to be your last moment of life. Deeper and deeper. Silence starts deepening. A subtle, undefinable bliss starts arising. A fragrance of Udambara tree. You are very close to Buddha. Just a little more, and you are the Buddha. The only quality that Buddha has is witnessing. Both the words mean the same. Be a witness, and you are a Buddha. To make this witnessing clear, more clear, Nivedana, relax. The body is there, The mind is there, but you are neither. You are the witness. This witness is your only treasure. Everything will be burnt on a funeral pyre. Only the witness cannot be touched by any fire, by any sword. The witness is your eternity. The evening was great on its own. But your silence, your peace, your blissfulness has made it 1,000 times more beautiful. If you can keep witnessing around the day, 24 hours, your whole life will become just an ecstasy. A man who dies without knowing ecstasy lived in vain or lived not. Before Nivedana calls you back, collect as much fragrance to bring with you. You are coming back as a Buddha. With the same grace, with the same joy, with the same fulfillment. Nivedana, come back silently. Sit for a few minutes, recollecting the experience you have been through. Because you have to keep this experience around the clock. A day will come, you will not need to remember it. It will be there whether you look at it or not. That day comes. I can say it with absolute authority because it has come to me. Why it cannot come to you? Every human being is a seed of the Buddha. And blessed are those seeds which come to their total flowering. Okay, Manisha.
Yes, Bhagavan.
Thank you.